I'm trying to get harder and tougher mentally and physically every day of my life.
You're either the growth mindset or you're the fixed mindset.
If you're trying to be the best, you need to look at who the best is and see what they do.
Relentless pursuit of progress.
There's a difference between the best and the rest.
Welcome to the Brute Strength Podcast.
Champions are built in the mind first.
Where we interview scientists, world champions, doctors, and experts in just about every area of health and fitness.
What do you care enough about? What are you fascinated enough about to go so deep and learn so much that you'll know more about it than anyone else?
And now, here's your host, Michael Cashew.
What's up, guys? Welcome back. My name is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week's guest is Mark England. This is round two. We did our first podcast, which was episode 116. And on that show, we talked about the power of language, what you tell yourself, what you tell to others, and how that creates what you believe, and thus how you feel and behave in life. And this one was super powerful. Two of the big things we covered, one was a four-step process for changing beliefs that are holding you back. So whether it's something that was traumatizing that happened, or it was just some kind of negative event in your life, or some kind of obstacle in your way of performing well, being happy, or just being successful, he has a four-step process for digging into that and changing that belief so that you can go on and be successful or perform well or be happier. And the second was the power of goal setting and why most goal setting processes suck. And he has a very detailed way of going about it. This guy is absolutely incredible, and I know you're going to enjoy this show. Before we get started, if you haven't done so already, please leave me a quick review on iTunes. And if you love the show, subscribe to it, share it with a friend. Enjoy. Mark, what's up, brother?
Mike, everything, man.
I'm excited to talk to you again. I saw you a few days ago, and I'm always excited to continue our conversation, dude. You're one of the, like, every single time I get done hanging out with you, I feel like my brain has just been stretched in the best way possible. And you're not, you know, so I get, like, intellectually stimulated when I'm around you, but you're, what you have that a lot of smart people don't have is an amazing sense of humor, and you're a great storyteller. So I'm just pumping your tires, bro. I'm happy to be here.
Well, dude, it's a two-way street, Mike. I love hanging out with you. You know, we've done three or four rounds in person. You're a cool guy, fun guy, smart guy, doing rad shit. And I'm glad to be a part of it.
Hell yeah, man. So just to catch everybody up, we did a round one, and we talked all about language and the way that, and Mark, correct me or fill in any gaps here, but the way I can describe what we talked about on the first show is really, really getting down and becoming getting down to the fundamentals and becoming more aware of your self-talk. I wouldn't call it positive self-talk per se, but we worked on becoming aware of our self-talk and what we can do to change the language in terms of what we're saying to ourselves and to others in a way that allows us to achieve our goals, be happier, be more successful in every area of life. How'd I do?
You did very well, man. We totally did. We got down into the nitty-gritty of it. And we also looked at the macro conversation, which is that there's a game to be played. And when I say a game, I mean there's a game to be played with ourselves about how we're talking to ourselves. How we're talking to ourselves and how we're talking to other people and how we're using our language, and that a couple of adjustments to our idea of what communication is and story is and identity is, and then some little rubber meets the road tips and tricks, it makes a huge difference for people, man. A huge difference. Huge.
Guys, that's episode 116 if you want to listen to the first one. So Mark, today I want to start to expand on this, and I want to talk about stories in particular. I want to talk about the stories that we tell ourselves about ourselves, which is what makes up our belief system.
Okay. So step one, let's back up. Like we talked about with drafting our goals, only 3% of the population has any written goals. Most people, as in 97%, don't have anything on paper about how they would like their life to look. And it's the same thing with stories in our background, okay? The experiences that we've had. So, you know, most people's dreams, they're on a looping pattern in their mind. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with stories. You know, that thing that happened 15 years ago that every time you think about it, it just spins you out. It's on a looping track. And first things first, you got to get that on paper. Write it out conversationally, because when it's looping and it's internal, it's infinite. That thing can just, it's like a gyroscope. It can just go forever, seemingly. And every time
you say it, are you talking about goals or stories this example?
Good question. I'm talking about the stories.
Got it.
I'm talking about the stories. So get that story on paper.
Can we give people a couple more concrete examples of some stories they might be telling themselves that will really resonate with them? One that comes to mind for me, a couple at least, are, I'm just an anxious person. That's something I hear a ton of people say. Or I've talked to a lot of people going through divorce, and it goes one of two ways or both ways. She's just a bitch, or he's just an asshole, and that's the story that they're telling themselves. Do you have any more examples?
Yeah, sure. Let's use one of those and play the one word game with it. So I'm just an anxious person. Very frequently, when we identify a sentence or a story like that, something that is causing a person stress, conflict, it's sending them in themselves into that sympathetic nervous system response that I talked about, we have them write it down. So I'm just a nervous person. Now, they write it down, and I have them repeat it, so they get a point of reference, and then I'll have them take out that word, that one word, just. And so that goes from, I'm just a nervous person, to I'm a nervous person. Is there any difference for you, Mike, when you hear those two statements?
Without a doubt, yeah. The just really drills into my head that's all that I am. Mm-hmm. And there are no other characteristics to me.
And then when we take it out, it's easier to call bullshit on that. And therein, a person gives himself an opportunity to say, well, wait a minute, that word just hijacked my thought process. And they can take themselves in another direction. As far as the story work is concerned, let's say someone has a divorce story, and the most painful part was when they sat the children down to tell them that mom and dad were separating. The children are 8 or 9, and the daughter was the older one, and she sat there and she welled up, and the son was the younger one. He just ran out and started crying, ran in his room and slammed the door. Okay, and then the two parents look at each other, and that's the end of the memory. Let's say that there's 7 to 8 sentences in that particular story. Once it's written down, and so before it's written down, And it could be a divorce story. It could be a story of abuse. It could be a story of a dog attack. It could be a story of a car accident. Whatever stories stress us out, most of the time, until they're processed, they haunt us. And so we want to get it first and foremost, step one, write it on paper. Because now it goes from this infinite looping, haunting story. Now it's got borders and I can see it, and it's about the size of two paragraphs, and it's outside of me now. And for whatever reason, it's more manageable. I can look at it. I've externalized it. And by no means am I saying any of this is easy. What I am saying is that almost always it's easier than living with the long-term consequences of unchecked stories. Step two, say it out loud. Verbalize it. And it very well, it could. Some people just I've seen people shaking before they can write the first letter. I've seen some people write it out, no problem. And then they go to say it. They've got a frog in their throat. That's okay. That's actually more than okay. It's part of the process of transcending that story. Verbalize it. Say it like you would normally say it. So now we're into the conversation of upregulation and downregulation. By nature, when someone's in sympathetic nervous system response, they're upregulated. They're upregulated and they're breathing up top. They're stressed. And if it's in context to a story like we're talking about, step one, write it down. Step two, say it. And then we're going to step three, say it at 70% speed. Because when I or you, Mike, or anyone slows down their rate of speech, what they're going to do is give themselves an opportunity to breathe more deeply. And not only does that feel good, it starts to rework and rewire our neural nets in context to that particular story. It literally changes our physiology in context to that story. And after having read that through at 70% speed, step four, this is the kicker. So you basically go from a flat line to a heartbeat. Read the first statement through. So we sat the kids down. So once we decided to tell the kids, we sat them down in the kitchen, period. Pause at the punctuation and breathe. My wife went first, or Susan went first, period, breathe. Jada welled up and stayed at the table, period, breathe. Michael burst into tears and ran upstairs and slammed his door, period, breathe. And so on and so on through the story. And it literally gives us breathing room in context to our narratives. When I mean breathing room, it's very often people describe the experience of that. Initially, the story is just in their face, and they go through that process of downregulation, and it brings it out 2-3 feet. That might sound strange, but it gives them that perspective, that breathing room. Really, when the breathing descends down into the abdomen, we get a broader perspective of what's going on. There's more to the story, and we can change the meaning of the story. As long as we're in that locked up state, it's very hard to change our perspective.
I want to tell these guys a couple short stories in regards to the breath. So Adi and I, for a long, and it's so ironic that we're having this conversation today, because yesterday we were talking to our friend Annie about exactly this. So Adi and I, one of our strategies when we're in a fight is either one of us at any time has permission to just put our hand up like you're showing your five fingers, like you're showing your palm to the other. And that means I'm gonna take a time out for a second and I'm gonna breathe and I'm gonna regulate myself. And that's the language that we use. And our goal is to either step away, go in another room for a couple minutes, or just stay right there and take a few deep breaths where the inhale or the exhale lasts twice as long as the inhale. So maybe 3-4 seconds in and double that amount of time out. And what happens literally without fail is we come back together, and kind of what you were getting at, we have more resources. We have, we can respond to each other more effectively and realize that we are shooting for a common outcome and neither one of us has to win. And what I've found so many times is when I forget to do this, I'm just stuck in trying to win the argument and I'm trying to make her wrong and I'm trying to just hold on to my stance. And if I can remember either in the moment or, you know, give her one of those pauses and regulate myself, without fail, I communicate better and we get through it very, very quickly. So that's the first story. The second one is Mark did a talk for the staff at the Brute Retreat this past week. And he gave a story of speaking at TEDx that had a huge impact on me that I went and then used. I used his strategy at the athlete camp. We had about 40 participants. And if you've been listening to me for any amount of time, then you know years ago I had a panic attack at our first Brute Retreat. I won't rehash the whole story, but it was literally the most humiliating moment of my life. And since then I've had just a shitload of fear anytime I have to speak, whether it be in front of 5 people or 50 people. And this time I decided that I was going to use Mark's strategy. And the strategy was to imagine how I wanted to feel when I spoke. And so I said I wanted to feel confident and relaxed. And then the next part of the strategy is, what do I have to do to feel confident and relaxed? And the thing that Mark said, and this really resonates with me, when I'm feeling confident and relaxed, I breathe from my belly. And so before I went out and gave my first lecture, I spent a couple minutes just focusing on breathing out of my belly, and just any thoughts that would come into my mind, I would just let them go. And I went out there, and it wasn't some world-changing, earth-shattering talk, but it was by far the most confident I've ever been giving a speech. And I think that strategy was a huge part of it. So thank you. And also, I'm just trying to further sell you guys on the power of focusing on your physiology, your breath.
It's huge. You win the breathing game, and you win almost all the good prizes. People, I said this last week too. I opened up 2.5 years of workshops with the same opening lines. So, hey, everybody, thanks for coming. My name's Mark. How do you all want to feel? Write it down right now. And people did. And asking thousands of people that, everybody comes back with basically the same answer. They want to feel comfortable in their skin. People want to feel okay with themselves. And it is damn near impossible. I tried a variety of different strategies, all of them failed, to feel good about myself and in myself and comfortable in my skin when I was breathing up in my chest. It just doesn't work. And a large part of that comes down to language and how we use it and how it uses us. And like I said, that 4-step approach that I shared right there Write it down. Say it. Say it at 70% speed. So write it out conversationally. Say it at 70% speed. And then say it at 70% speed with a breath at each punctuation. It will help take more than just the edge off. You'll change the way you see yourself. You will change your perspective. You'll change the way you feel overall. It's amazing and it's free. Anybody can do it.
Yeah, it's stupid simple, man. Stupid simple.
Yes.
Let's talk more about that goal setting exercise you had us do, because you know, when you first said we're going to write some goals down, I saw some people's eyes glaze over, and by the end of it, every single person in the room was just fired up and fully engaged in the conversation. So talk to us about goal setting. Why does most goal setting fail? And then what's a better way to do it?
You know, that's a good question. A lot of people, that's a very common reaction. They think goal setting sucks. And here's three of the main reasons why. You know, there's a lot of drama when it comes to goal setting. It's over dramatized. Like the lead up, we have to have the Rocky song playing in the background as we write our goals, because it's these huge commitments of time and energy and we have to break through all these stuck paths. No, most of the goal setting that I've done is done without much noise or background music. It's me contemplating. It's quiet. Okay. Goal setting is very quiet most of the time, and peaceful and serene. It's a time to contemplate. It's a time to get your thoughts on paper. And then there's a misunderstanding of how to do it. And, I also mentioned this last week. You know, what's the difference? This is a question for your audience. What's the difference between a dream and a goal? And it's very simple. So this goes to strategy. This goes to education too. Most people did not have it, probably not even one class in college or high school or middle school about how to set goals. And first things first, the way you take a dream and turn it into a goal is that you write it down. You write it down, and then you draft it. You put it through a process, which I'll share our process with you in a second. It's very easy. It's 4-3 and why. And then there's doubt. Then there's the doubt that comes in. So these are all flavors of resistance for people when it comes to goal setting. It's over-dramatized. It's misunderstood how to do it. And then if I set some goals, I mean, you know, taking action towards our goals, it exposes our weaknesses and it invites failure. And a lot of that is not that much fun. It's a major deterrent. And my answer to that is I'd rather be the great quote, I'd rather be trampled in the stadium than to watch in the stands, or even worse, in the parking lot. You know, give me the failures, give me the successes, give me the trials and tribulations. And also give me a pen and a piece of paper so I can write down my goals. So write down your goals. Drafts. We mentioned this earlier. Most people only have that's the second time I've said it that way. 3% of the population, only 3% of the population has any written goals. That means 97% of the population only has an idea in their head about how they would like their life to be. It is much easier to take action and know what actions to take and cut out the stress of indecision once you write down what you want. Okay? And so here's the setup. 4-3 and why. So 4, write it out conversationally. That's 1. In the affirmative, that's 2. Personalize it. That's 3. and add in the numbers. That's four. So conversational. It's the difference between lose 20 pounds and I want to lose 20 pounds. And make it personal. So the I is in there. And a lot of times that happens when it's conversational. Okay. I want to lose 20 pounds. Now you add in, you make sure it's affirmative. So instead of saying, I want to lose, I don't want to feel so lethargic anymore. So that's focusing on what you don't want. Okay. We want to focus on what we do want. So I want to feel, or I want to lose 20 pounds by when? So now we're adding in numbers. By June 15th, 2019. And let's make it even better. And I want to maintain 185 pounds for the next 2 years. Something along those lines. Then the three, so that's your four. The three is the next three action steps. The very next three moves that you got to make on the chessboard to make that happen. And then your why. What's going to happen by doing so? Why do you want to do that? How will your life change? And that brings in the power of because. Did we talk about the power of because in the first show? Okay, so
you were holding back the secrets.
Oh my goodness, naughty me. Dr. Robert Cialdini, in his book Influence, The Power of Persuasion, they did a fascinating study about the power of because. And what they did is they went into a copy room in a major office, and they went in during peak copy hours, and they had someone go to the front of the line and say, excuse me, can I get in front of you to make some copies? And they had a success rate of 66%. They had that same person, different day, go to the front of the line and say, excuse me, I'd like to make some copies because I'm late for a meeting. Or because if I get this to my boss by 2, I can make my dentist appointment. Or because I'm really not feeling well and I'd like to go ahead and get this done so I can go home. Their yes rate went up to 94%. Then they got bold. And they went to the front of the line and said, excuse me, can I get in front of you to make some copies? Because I'd like to make some copies. And people said yes 93% of the time. So
I love that.
It's crazy and awesome and real. And I use it with myself. I use it with my clients. When someone adds in the power of because, they can expect a 33% boost in energy from themselves for their goal. So when someone has a target, okay, a goal, something they want to do, it's written out in conversational English with some numbers in there. When they want to have it done by, how much money they want to make by the certain date, or how much money they want to make per month, how many people they want to influence over the next 5 years, how many podcasts they want to do over the next 10 years. And then they have the next three action steps, and then they give themselves a why, and it's written down, and they can look at it. And if they really want to take it to the next level, sign it and date it and put it up for you to see. And now here's the best part. Negation acknowledged. Do not take my word for it. Try it out yourself. Try it out yourself. Please do not believe me. Doubt me. And do it. Pick something. Pick something for 2019. If you're listening, grab a piece of paper and a pen right now. I triple dog dare you. And write it down. Even if it's in a little bit of a scribble. So now you've got a draft. And then you go back after you're finished listening to the rest of the podcast, and you write the four steps down, the four, the three, and the why, and then you second draft your goal. And now you've got something you feel even better about. Then you circle back tomorrow, you sleep on it, and then you write it out even more detail and it's an even more well-developed thought. You have articulated well what you want to do in 2019, and then you sign it and date it and tape it up somewhere for you to see. That's cool. Yeah, go for it and see what happens. And then email Mike.
Failing to plan is planning to fail. And we do not have a plan for our life. At least 97% of us don't. And the other 3%, or at least 2.99%, don't have a detailed enough roadmap.
100%. Right? It's just 100%.
I don't want to feel lethargic, or I'd like to be fitter.
Yeah.
And that's better than nothing. But the more, and I picked up this term recently, the more high def you can make it, the more detailed you can make this, the more likely that you're actually going to follow through with it. Because then it allows you to start to identify the steps. Because a goal, I want to get fitter. Well, there's a billion different things that you can do for that. But if it's, I will lose 20 pounds by June 1st, 2019, then there, you know, it really starts to narrow your focus. And if you add that because, and you're connected to that because along the way, it makes all of the mundane tasks and responsibilities that come along with achieving anything great, it just makes it part of the process rather than making it feel mundane or challenging.
100%. 100%. And what we're talking about with this exercise, okay, so cleaning up the backstory, where we've been. Okay, because these stories of I'm not good enough for whatever reason, trust me, they influence massively your ability to move forward when it comes to going for your goals. So you use that, the four-step process, clean up some of your backstories. And please, don't believe me on that one either. Try it. Watch what happens. And so you've got the backyard's a little bit cleaner than it was. And then you're detailing the front yard, where you're going. And guess what we're talking about becoming, okay? By definition, we're taking the mystique out of it. Or not mystique, mystique? Yeah, mystique. Taking the mystique out of it. Visionaries. Visionaries in our culture, they have this very, very elevated status when in reality, we are all, by definition, visionaries. The definition of vision is the act or power of seeing. That's what vision is. And the definition of a visionary is one having unusual foresight or imagination. Okay? Cool. Yeah, that's exactly. That's it. It's all it is unusual. That means, let's take out unusual and put in unique. And unique means you. And then we're talking about when you, Mike, or I, or anybody writes things down, we are developing our muscle, the muscle of focus. The definition of focus, it's a point of concentration or directed attention. That's it. And if you maintain your focus for long enough on something, things that interest you and that you want to get better at, then by definition, well, actually by the unofficial definition of being a visionary, and what I mean by that is, oh, that person's a visionary. They're, you know, they can see it. If you, because nobody that saw something 17 years ago one Sunday afternoon for 30 minutes and then never saw it again, they're not called visionaries. That was just something they saw. A visionary is the person that holds their focus on what they want and where they're going, and that they get comfortable enough with it and themselves for them to be able to properly articulate it. It has to come out. No vision. There has never been a visionary on the planet that got anything done by keeping the whole thing to himself or herself.
Right.
It's got to come out. It's got to come out in writing. It's got to come out in language, and you're going to have to repeat it over and over and over again. Mike, you brute strength. How have you verbalized? How many times have you said that word and talked about what it is, and then brought people in and just look at what's happening now? It's
hundreds, if not thousands, of different iterations.
Exactly. And let's play pretend. What if you never had the courage to say it?
Well, it would be extremely small, and it probably would have fizzled out, and we'd be doing something else right now.
Yeah, be doing something else. We wouldn't be on this call.
Right.
And it, you know, everybody's got a story that they can buy into about themselves, about a telephobia, like the fear of not being good enough, and then talking themselves out of something cool. I got a good buddy of mine, man, that he had a great idea to do a podcast, and this was like 7-8 years ago, back when podcasts were rare, and he was going to do them over Chinese tea and then sell Chinese tea. And he liked martial arts, and I said, okay, cool, I'm your first guest. I know a ton of people in the area that are into martial arts. We'll just get you started like that. Okay. And he did 3 shows and he stopped. You know why he stopped? Because he didn't like the sound of his own voice.
Mm.
I don't know many people that do like the sound of their own voice when they first hear it.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Like the first time I saw me on video, I almost freaked. Now I don't even flinch. And that's just that's just doing the reps. Yeah. So, I mean, distraction. What distracts us? You know, the stories that we talked about is conflict stories. The definition of distraction, that's interesting. To draw away someone's attention or to stir up and confuse with conflicting motives or emotions.
Mm.
Limit our distractions, develop our focus, build a momentum, become our own visionaries. Because only you can have a vision of what you want your life to be. Even if someone else says that they do or tells it to you, you got to buy into it. So even when we don't think we are, we're still driving the bus.
Right. I had 2 big aha moments when you were defining vision and visionary. The first was that it is the act of seeing. So practicing writing down and verbalizing our vision and our goals and where we're headed is just part of being a visionary and being someone who can create things in their life rather than just react. And the second was, a visionary is, you said it in a way that, to use your language, it makes us a process rather than someone is just either good or bad at it. And it let me know that it's something that we can build into ourselves. And the only way that we can do that is by getting reps in, by trying it out and using hindsight to see what worked, what didn't, and then continue refining our ability to see into the future and to create, you know, to create positive goals for ourselves, or for a business or for a relationship or whatever it may be.
It's a practice.
It's huge.
It's a practice, and it's real. Most people think of visionaries as just, you know, they're over there and the rest of us are over here following. No, not at all. And that's good news.
All right. So let's wrap it up. I'll start here. You and Mike Bledsoe are creating something new and awesome. And Mike has been one of the biggest mentors probably in my entire life. You're a kick-ass human being. What are you guys up to?
We're up to in lifting the vibe of the fitness industry. We see a wave of interest coming in the form of wanting more from the workout culture than the traditional in the box movements and in-the-box thinking. A lot of that is coming from, you know, people that have been in the functional fitness industry for a while as practitioners and competitors, and you know, asking what's next. Mike does a world-class job of keeping his finger on the pulse of functional fitness with his podcast, and just it's the way the guy is. And I do a pretty good job of tracking the story, the language of the functional fitness culture, the athletics culture. And we're putting together it's going to end up being a movement. December 1st-ish, we launch our first training course. It's called The Way of the Enlifted Athlete. And it's very similar to the Procabularies course. 21 days, quick video, 5-minute video, quiz on it, downloadable PDF. And it's going to give people a way to develop their lives in a more holistic fashion than the normal no pain, no gain, grit your teeth, push through, hard work, go play hard, work hard, play hard mentality. And that's where we're going to start. We will incorporate movement. We'll have a movement component and a breathing component. And when I mean component, I mean courses. And that will be the foundation of the Enlifted Athlete. We're very, very interested and exciting in helping people move better, breathe better, and use their language better. And we've had a damn good time doing it too, man. The course is just ruthless. It's ruthless. It's hilarious. It's thought provoking. It's challenging. I'm very interested to see how it is received. Some people are going to love us. Some people are going to. Some people are going to really love us. Let me say it like that.
So guys, you know that probably my biggest obsession in life is mindset in and outside of the gym. And I've been talking about it for the last few years with some of the top experts in all areas of health and fitness. And I know a little bit about what these guys are putting together. And this is the mindset course. I know there's nothing like this out there. And I know everybody, you know, a lot of people are talking about it, but no one's really teaching it, right? It's a quote on Instagram or a little paragraph here or there about so-and-so athlete having a strong mindset and one thing that, you know, they use to compete better. But this is the way to actually train your mindset. Dude, I'm fired up for you, man. And I'm fired up to take it myself.
Thanks, man. We're excited for you to take it, and let's talk about what happens on the other side of it. People are going to train better. They're going to train longer. They're going to get hurt less. They're going to enjoy their cheat meals more. They're going to relate to people better outside of the gym. They're going to relate to themselves better in the gym. We're taking the conversation for the people that want to join, of course, away from the comparison land hell of pitting ourselves against other people accidentally. Mm-hmm. And we're creating the next, we've created, it's in the can actually. We've created the language for the next generation of functional fitness athletes. We've created the story for it. We've created the mindset for them. Because we want them to be better than we ever were. We want the children that are coming up in gyms and the young competitors to be able to have more gears than we had. And when I say we, I mean Mike, myself, and Adam, or my business partner. Like for me and for Mike and I, our only rest days were when we had hangovers. Okay, mm-hmm. It was always down those speed stackers or ultimate oranges, rip fuels,
Jack 3D,
all of it, and then go as hard as you can. Every time, if it wasn't to the point of exhaustion, it wasn't a workout. And then that's just the low hanging fruit of the stressed out conversation that most people have with themselves about themselves when they go into the gym. It's most people's conversation, their internal dialogue when they're in the gym working out. If someone spoke to their child like that, they wouldn't even talk to a dog that way, trying to squeeze out that extra little bit of result. There is a better way, and we have articulated the story of that better way. Hence the name, The Way of the Enlifted Athlete.
So by the time this episode launches or airs, the program will have launched. Where can people get this? Where can they find out more?
Enlifted.com.
Enlifted.com. Mark, you're the fucking man. Appreciate your time, brother. Where can they keep up with you personally?
Mark England 2020. That's me on Instagram. Procabulary on Instagram. Yeah, we post cool stuff. And
I am at Michael Cazioux, CAZAYOUX. Mark, as always, I appreciate your time, brother.
The pleasure, Mike, as always.
This episode is finished, but your training journey continues. Head over to brutestrengthtraining.com/SSW and grab your free pack of 32 accessory workouts that you can incorporate into your training and start improving your strength immediately. That's brutestrengthtraining.com/SSW.